This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today we have a guest with us today, John R. Bradford III. Hey, John, how are you doing?
Hey, Sean and Joni. Good to see you guys. Thanks for having me on your podcast here.
Absolutely. I am so excited to have you on today. Tell us a little bit about what you have going on there with pet screening and that background in the back. That's pretty awesome.
Well, it is. You know, what's even more awesome is this is Bailey, one of our employees' dogs. It's actually a sound panel, so it's functional too. We have these, we're in an old mill with 20-foot ceilings, so it echoed. So we had to buy these sound panels. So on the main sound panel, we had custom printed all of our employees' pets. And this is Bailey.
That's awesome. Are they allowed to bring their pets to work?
As I'm talking to you, I just saw two dogs walk by my glass. Okay.
So this has been a request for years, and I just keep denied. But maybe I can compromise, and we can do some panels for them and put them in their offices.
Yes. I provided little, you know, like their baby gates. They're the wooden baby gates. And so I have 15 baby gates here, and you just grab them when you come in and you put it across. We call them yard spaces. They're made of wood. They look like privacy fences because we made everything feel like it's outside in our office, being like we have pets running around. And you just put the little baby gate across your yard space and you feel like you're in a little privacy fence area with your dog. And then they can run around during certain times. We let them all run around.
That is awesome. Well, yeah.
Super cool. Well, so I'll give you just a little background or a brief bio on John. So John is an experienced entrepreneur and CEO with a demonstrated history of working in the property management and pet tech industry, as well as in local and state government. He is the founder of two companies, Park Avenue Properties and Pet Screening. John is a strong business development professional skilled in the rental housing management industry, technology startup space, legislative affairs, and legal compliance review. He is serving a third term in the North Carolina House of Representatives. In his spare time, he likes to fish, camp, and travel with his family. So again, John, thank you again for being with us today. Before we get into pet screening, I love the service, by the way. We've been clients of yours now for about 3 years. And I like to tell my clients or my owners that we screen the pets just like we screen the tenants, yes. Right, for a good applicant. So they think it's amazing when I tell them the story, and so I'll let you get into it. But give us a little bit of background on yourself, how you got started, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, no, again, thanks for having me, and most certainly thank you for being a valued client. You know, I think entrepreneurs, you know, I meet a lot of folks who have business ideas, and I always remind them the difference between I think entrepreneurs that make it are the entrepreneurs that actually try their ideas. And trust me, I've had ideas. I've competed in inventors contests. I've made it to the finals only to find out there was a patent on something. And so I've always tried things. And trust me, many of them didn't work out. But the point is, I think the difference between me and others that have expressed, you know, their desire to get in their own businesses is you got to take a chance, right? No risk, no reward. And so this is my second. Yeah, this is my second startup company. But this one was pet screening was spurred. The idea was sort of came to mind because of what I did, like you, in property management. I saw a need, and I think that's what entrepreneurs do. We see needs and we go solve them. But property management for me started not because I was born into property management. My mom and dad were both educators. My dad's retired Air Force, Vietnam veteran. But I got into property management because I was a sales executive for IBM Corporation, and I was selling IBM products and services. And I always made my numbers, and I made, you know, really decent commissions. And I started buying real estate as a hobby. This was when a TomTom navigation, I'll date myself, TomTom was the only navigation unit. It was like you put it on your dash because phones did not have navigation in them. And it was $1,000 for a TomTom. And I refused to pay $1,000. So I just had a map. And I would map out literally with highlighter of where these houses were that I wanted to buy for myself as investments. And I started buying homes, and then I would fix them up and I would sell them. And I did all my own work. I did my own pine straw, did my own painting, and really started making incredible money as a hobby while I was working at IBM. And that's when other people that I worked with at IBM said, John, go find me a house. But I need you to, because I would rent my own houses, right? They're my assets. And they said, well, go find me a house and I'll let you rent it. And that's how I started property management. It was purely because of friends who wanted me to go procure them a good deal and then manage it. And so I started at zero and grew my company, Park Avenue. I mean, at the height of our company, I think we were like 3,200 properties because we were helping a lot of those institutional investors, which were really just starting way back when. And we were their company of choice for the Carolinas. And eventually they all, you know, what I call centralized and went their own ways. And we probably got back to about 1,500 doors. But that's how I started property management. I just started buying houses for myself. And boy, it's the hardest job out there. And it's a tough road, but it's very rewarding. And then pet screening came as a result of that eventually.
That is really cool. You know, what's interesting is that Sean and I kind of have a similar story because we actually were investors prior to getting started in the property management space. And so helping investors, you know, build wealth through rental real estate, that kind of thing. So I didn't know that about you. So very cool.
Yeah, very neat. Yeah. We have similar paths, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into pet screening. Tell us, you know, give us the rundown on how it works. And how you service the property management industry.
Yeah, so first I'll tell you, you know, like I said, I think the best ideas are solving problems. And my own company, Park Avenue, we had two dog bites, Joni and Sean, within like 6 weeks of each other. And one was in the state of Indiana and one was in the state of Florida because we were in multiple states because these large investors were dragging us into cities where they needed a property manager. And within those 6 weeks, two different dog bite incidents. And the state statutes for Florida and for Indiana, if you're sued and you have general liability insurance, you must release your policy information. North Carolina, if you have insurance, you don't necessarily have to release it. You can be compelled to release it through the courts, but you don't necessarily have to give that information over. Well, Florida and Indiana, you have to. So I was forced to get my insurance involved. Otherwise, I would have, you know, I think took a stronger stand because both of those dog bite incidents, my company did not place the pets, nor did we place the residents. We acquired these portfolios that were already rented by someone who was managing it before us. The challenge is for my company at the time is we were the property manager of record at the time of the dog bite. And it didn't matter if I placed that resident or not, or if I placed that pet or not. We were the ones that were managing the property. Therefore, we got sued as well as the asset owner, which happened to be the institutions. And then, of course, the owner of the dog. But the owner of the dog was a tenant, so they didn't have really any assets for anyone to go after. So I was upset about it because I felt like it was wrong. But it, you know, it is what it is. However, I asked my team, what if it would have been our dog? Like, what if we would have placed the dog? What information would we have? And I got a very academic answer from my leadership team. And I'm not critical of that, but they gave me a very academic answer. And so I went to my property managers and asked the same question. And you can imagine we had multiple property managers and I got multiple different answers. And what it really taught me was even a company like mine, who I thought was pretty sophisticated. We had in-house legal counsel, you know, we had pods of teams, you know, I mean, we were kind of a leader in the industry, I think a pioneer of technology. It just still showed that even we had issues and things to clean up. And what I learned was even my company wasn't really standardizing how we handle pets. And that is where the idea of pet screening, I think, first was a glimmer in my eye. How do you create a product that can standardize the management of pets so that you know every time every property manager is getting the same information and then somehow that information is being properly evaluated? And the other piece of pet screening besides screening just traditional dogs and cats, household pets, is there's a movement in the world of individuals who have disabilities that need emotional support animals and service animals if they need a task performed. And there are very much, Joni and Sean, people who really need these animals, and they're not the problem. The problem is it's not hard to sort of make it up and to go obtain false information, fraudulent information to say that your pet is an emotional support animal. And that's a big issue for property managers because they don't know how to properly review these to make sure they're not violating or discriminating against someone who's claiming they have a disability. And because of my background as a legislator, even though I'm not in Congress at DC level, and I serve in the House of Representatives in North Carolina, I am the guy, one of the main bill, I guess, carriers of tenant landlord law. And everyone was coming to me about ESAs. And that's when I thought, well, gosh, there's got to be a way to help the industry navigate the complexities around assistance animals, the challenges with pets that I talked about, my own experience. And that's really how the idea all came together. And 6 years later, We have millions of units across the country using our service. It's free to, as you know, it's free to property managers, our model. We charge an application fee or processing fee to pet owners. We have 90 people here at Pet Screening now. 90, can you believe it? I pinch myself. And that's kind of what we do. I'm giving a high level sketch, but that's kind of a high story on it.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely a no-brainer to, you know, work with you guys, because I mean, that's one of the main reasons why we started. Was we had, you know, application after application with emotional support animals, and just fearful of violating the fair housing laws, or our employees saying something that they shouldn't say, you know, those kind of things. And I can tell you that you guys have helped us tremendously in that respect, right?
Yeah, and it brings a lot of, but the owners love it, and they love that assurance, and they love, but yeah, us as owners of the company, just the legal protection that we get from, you know, because the bigger you get, the bigger the operation.
Oh, yes.
It's harder to control some of those variables. And so it's been nice to have that service. So yeah, we appreciate it, you guys, very much. So I want to know, just from a curiosity standpoint, how do you manage all that you do? Like, how do you got pet screening, you got a very large property management company, and then you're very involved with legislation. So how do you balance all that?
You know, well, I'm a pretty high energy guy. I probably get about, you know, 5 to 6 hours of sleep a night. I'm a night owl. But I don't consider myself really that talented. I will say, though, if there's one area that I somehow have a gift, and I thank the good Lord above, is I have the ability to attract people at the top of my organization. So I would characterize it as like your right hand and your left hand people, right? You always need a good right hand and left hand. And at Park Avenue, I was able to get, Jennifer Stoops, who I think you guys probably know of. You know, Jennifer, I was able to pluck her out of a newspaper ad, and she was a former dental hygienist. And I just had the ability to pick people who can see the vision that I have. And I don't want to like paint some story that I'm some visionary. It's not even that. I just tell them where I think we're going and buckle up and let's go together. And I think, you know, my secret is just getting really amazing people to help execute the things that you want to do. And from Park Avenue to, you know, and Park Avenue is now a part of Pure. I don't know if you know that or not, but we're part of the Pure organization, but I'm a limited partner in Pure. So I don't really have that on my plate anymore as much, because at some point, you know, you can only have so many masters, right? It's hard to have multiple masters and people and things that you have to, you know, handle. And so between the legislature, father, husband, pet screening, Park Avenue, something had to give. And so I had an opportunity to become a part of a different company. But all that said, pet screening is now to the point where I have a true C-level suite. I have a COO, a chief growth officer, a chief legal counsel, chief financial officer, and a VP of sales. And those five people are amazing people. So it lets me replicate myself. And that's very important in how I can put time into the legislature, for example, because that's a whole different mindset when you're in political, you know, government, the political space. So I would just say good people. That was a long answer. I'm sorry, Sean. Good people.
No, it was a great answer.
I sound like a politician, don't I? I should just say good people.
So, John, we have a lot of listeners that are either in the property management industry or investors and maybe self-managed properties. And if you would tell us, you know, what the importance of having a pet policy in place, and take a thorough look on the pet owner and the pet, and what tips would you give to our listeners?
So, yeah, great question. In fact, I'm going to pivot that question a little bit. I'm going to actually talk about everyone wants to think about pets, which is exactly right. But what about those residents and tenants that say they have no pet? I think most people just totally ignore them and say, well, they say they have no pet, so we move on. And one of the things we do at Pet Screening is, even if you do not have a pet, we still make you go through our process, and it doesn't cost anyone anything if you don't have a pet. It's completely free. But more importantly, to build that liability layer for the property managers like you, and then of course the owners that have hired you for you know, your expertise, is we get those non-pet owners on the record acknowledging that not only do they not have a pet when they move in, but they understand they cannot get a pet for their birthday or for Christmas or on a night that's raining, and they find a pet on the side of the road. They can't pet foster. They cannot pet sit. They cannot have visitors with pets, at least without your written permission. If you give them written permission because, you know, their mom and dad's coming to town and they have two little shih tzus and you're okay with it, that's different. But what's important is most people who don't have pets, they always have visitors with pets. And trust me, if that visiting pet bites someone, you're going to get sued. So our product gets those people on the record acknowledging that even though they don't have a pet, there's still pet policies they have to follow, which includes all those things I just talked about. Now, when it comes to pets, obviously, making sure pets are remain vaccinated, especially from a rabies perspective, is very important. It's important to make sure they understand leashing. They should be leashed at all times, except if it's like in an enclosed fenced area, like a backyard or a dog park, which is appropriate to be off a leash. Otherwise, it should be on a leash. Having those types of policies are extremely important to show a judge and jury that as a property manager, you know, you at least put the fundamental rules out there for them to follow. And pet screening, what we do is we handle all that for you. We're getting all those things on the record so that if someone says, yes, I agree and acknowledge that I will keep my dog on a leash at all times, unless my dog is in an enclosed fenced area, a lot of dog bites happen when it's off leash. So if there's a dog bite that happens and during discovery, let's say your insurance company gets involved, because trust me, they will, and they find out that this dog was not on a leash, you'll be able to point back to the pet screening profile and say, hey, this tenant said they would always keep their dog on a leash, and here it is in writing. And that will really help you from a liability perspective. So I think just having common sense policies, but policies don't help if you don't make sure people know what the policies are and sign off on them. And that's what pet screening really is helping the industry, you know, do a better job of.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, that question right there, like we had a situation, I'm going to tell you a story. So we had a tenant that, of course, submitted an application, said that they had no pets, right, and moved into the property. And we got a violation from the homeowners association saying that there were three pets spotted in there were three pit bulls spotted in the neighborhood that were off leashes and they were coming from this house. And I'm like, no, they signed the addendum stating that there is no pets, right? And so we looked further into it. Sure enough, we inspected the property and there was three pit bulls in the property. And I can tell you, that addendum, them signing that addendum saved us, because we went to court and the tenant stated that they were emotional support animals, right? And so they had signed this addendum saying that they had no pets. Well, the judge evicted them because they signed that addendum and, you know, there was no paper saying that they were emotional support animals. So I can tell you that, you know, it saved us on numerous occasions, right?
Well,
it was if you even goes further, the funny part about that whole story, he said there were medical equipment, the dogs, but this was a couple years ago and we still had a very conservative,
Texas, right?
Yeah, we had a very conservative judge still, he's since passed, but, he was like, you know what? Because I actually went to this court case and I said, you know, like if he needed these dogs so bad, why aren't they here right now? This would seem like a very high pressure situation. And the judge stood up and said, well, if he would have brought those dogs to my courtroom, I would have shot them myself. And I was like, so this is just tells you how the judge was. He's no longer with us, but I mean, he was a very conservative, old school judge. But yeah, it was, I mean, thanks to what we assigned with you guys and all that, it really did help us.
Yeah, having all that documentation, because even after the court hearing, right, this tenant still went on and filed a fair housing complaint on us saying that we were discriminating, but we had all of our documentation from you guys, so that saved us.
Well, that's great. And a lot of people, they use the loophole. A lot of property managers say, do you have a pet? And what they do is they go, well, I have, in their minds, they go, I have an emotional support animal. You're not asking me if I have an animal. You're asking me if I have a pet. And they know that an animal is different than a pet in the context of housing. So they say, no, I don't have a pet. And then property managers don't think to ask the next question, which is, well, then do you have an animal? And that's what pet screening does. We give them three choices. And one of the choices applies in every single instance. They either have no pet, they have a household pet, or they're seeking an accommodation request for an animal. They have to answer one of those buttons. They have to click one of them. And that's where pet screening really keeps our property managers aligned. And when I say out of trouble, I can't stop property managers from doing silly things. And we've had a few property managers that have probably said some things they regret saying, and I can never stop that. But if they just stuck to the script and said, you know what, we use a third party service to help us with it, just please go through that service, they'd be in much better shape.
Yeah. And I love the point too, because we, before we started this, this recording was, you know, we, you, your company and all that obviously have a very big passion for pets and animals. And so it's not a negative, it's more just keeping people accountable. And the people that truly love pets, you know, it's helping them, you know, as far as screening for them properly, but also protecting all parties and just keeping everybody accountable. It's not that we're against pets, because I know you and your company are very for pets, because we talked about, you know, just a minute ago about
take your dog to take, work yeah,
and all the amenities that you provide for people to have pets at their at your employment.
You're right.
It's coming from a good place.
So. Yeah, we like to say that we're not punitive in any way. That's not our role. Our role, though, is to make sure that the property manager has information on the record. And we use that information to try to help property managers make more informed decisions. And I'll just pick on a German Shepherd. A lot of property managers across the property management industry, they still have a no German Shepherd policy. At Pet Screening, we fundamentally do not believe that every German Shepherd is dangerous. What we believe is it's about the owner. And so we collect data on that German Shepherd. If you have a German Shepherd that's been vaccinated, microchipped, has been to Canine Good Citizen School, not only does that tell you that the dog is probably a decent dog, but it tells you you have an owner that's willing to invest into their dog. And those types of owners are the ones that are leashing. They are picking up the dog waste. They're not problem residents. And so we try to use the data to make property managers think about their pet acceptance decisions differently. The policy is always with the property manager. We never give a determination of yes or no when it comes to a pet. We just give that FIDO score. It's a risk assessment for them to use. But we have more property managers that are more open to breed all breeds than ever before pet screening started. And I think that's a wonderful consequence of a tool like ours.
One question I have for you. So walk us through the process. We have an applicant that says that they have an emotional support animal. What do you guys do on your end to screen them? All the steps that you guys take to make sure that it's a legitimate, you know, emotional support animal.
Yeah, so if someone says they're seeking an accommodation request for a support animal, our tool is really just a tool that collects the HUD permissible information. The tool itself does not make a determination of any kind, and there's a reason for that. Under the federal guidelines for HUD and the Fair Housing Act, every individual that's seeking a reasonable accommodation request in theory has a disability, and they have the right to have their request reviewed uniquely. So you really cannot algorithmically make a decision. You cannot formulaically make a decision. Someone actually has to review it. So we have two attorneys here at Pet Screening that actually run our assistance animal review team. I think that team is at least 20 people right now total. And we have people that are former therapists, former social workers, former nurses. We find a lot of people from the healthcare industry that just kind of got burnt out. And that's not a requirement, by the way, but I like hiring those types of people because they're reviewing letters that are often coming from other health professionals. Now, we never inquire about the specific nature of anyone's disability. That's none of our business. Although a lot of these letters we receive really go into great detail about their disability because they are voluntarily sharing that information. But what our team does is we review each and every request individually to make sure that the documentation they submit meets the standard, which means it affirms a disability is present or exists, and two, there's a disability-related need for the animal. If we believe that information is all in the same document, then we're not done. We send it to our team of verifiers. And what they do is they call the healthcare professional's office and we talk to the records department, or we even talk to the therapist, you know, himself or herself, if it's a small practice. And all we're doing is making sure that that document is authentic. We're not questioning the diagnosis because that's not our role. Our role at that point is just to make sure that the document is authentic and meaning they really did issue it, and two, that they have personal knowledge of that patient. And we do that, those two steps on every single request. And, you know, it's a lot of work. I mean, really a lot of work, but we know what we're doing. We've done hundreds of thousands of them. And very interestingly, since I started Pet Screening, from when we had done 200 of these to now when we've done over several hundred thousand of them, the number has been the same. 60%, that's 60, 60% of the reasonable accommodation requests do not meet the standard. do not. And that is really, and that's a huge number. It doesn't mean that they're trying to commit fraud. It just means they don't have what they need to meet the standard. And that means it's a pet. And until they meet the standard, it's a pet. And we do this day in, day out. And again, we're not punitive. Now, do we find fraud? Yes, we find doctors who say, that's not my letterhead, that's not my signature. And then that is truly a not recommend. But in most instances, we just say it's insufficient. It doesn't meet the standard. We're not telling you no, but we're not telling you yes either. It's an open request. And they have to provide the information that they need. Otherwise, it's a pet. And that's how we do what we do every single day.
That is awesome. And it's a ton of work on the back end that you guys do. So.
It's a lot of work. And
I'll switch gears for a little bit. In your companies that you built as an entrepreneur, how have you set your companies apart from the competition? And I don't even know if there is a competition in pet screening. Maybe there is by now, but I'm just curious how, you know, in the past, maybe with your property management company, how have you set yourself apart from everybody else?
Well, the first thing is I don't ever worry about anybody else. I focus on what I'm doing because there's always enough business to go around. I mean, there just is. I mean, it's a big old world out there. And so I've always just said, let's not get distracted. Let's not take our eye off the prize. And, you know, there's a high road and then there's the pet screening high road. We take a very high standard because with my role in government, I don't ever want to be accused of doing something improper. And so we take a very, very high standard. We have built a relationship with HUD, the Office of Enforcement, Washington, D.C. We do that because someone needs to be communicating to HUD what they're seeing at the field level. And there is no one like us. I mean, there's no one that has the number of the quantity of data, the volume of data. In fact, I was on a call literally 2 weeks ago with the Assistant Deputy Secretary of HUD and their Office of Enforcement. And it was through a NARPM industry call that I was invited to join. And that office knows PetScreen. They know who we are. And, you know, we're not out trying to get HUD's endorsement because that's not HUD's role, but we're making sure HUD knows what we're seeing in the field. And so I think it's just really being, I've always said, we don't want to be a mile wide and an inch deep. We just don't want to do that. We want to be very focused on what we know best. And we know what we're doing. We've proven it time and time again. And we're just continuing to do that. And we're not going to get distracted by really anything, because I think when you start to take your eye off the prize and you get distracted, I could argue, why are you worrying about someone else? Worry about yourself. And if everybody worried about themselves, I think just generally speaking, this world would be a better place. But everybody's too busy being nosy and trying to see what everyone else is doing. We just hunker down, do our job. If we make a mistake, we admit it and we fix it. And that's the best way I know to run any company, whether it's pet screening or Park Avenue or anything else I've been involved in. I have this saying, Sean and Joni, and I've said it many times. It's my company, so it's my fault. I don't care if one of my entry-level employees made a mistake. At the end of the day, it's my company, my fault. It's up to me. It's incumbent on me to make sure all of my team, you know, does know what they're doing. And if someone goofs it up, yes, I can help make them better. And if they, you know, repeat the same error twice, okay, well, now we are going to make a change. But at the end of the day, I jump in front of buses and trains for my team because that's what I think that's what a good, you know, founder and CEO should do. We own our mistakes and we fix them.
That's a great answer.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Takeaways I got from having an abundance mindset and focus are the keys to success, right? So we have a lot of young entrepreneurs starting out. What advice would you give maybe a young entrepreneur just maybe starting out?
Well, you know, one, I would say, great question. And I get asked this frequently and I probably have different answers every time. But I think the spirit of the answer is always the same. You know, one is follow through. If you believe it's a good idea, and if you're not going to follow through, who's going to bet on you? No one will bet on you harder than you. Like if you know, you have to bet on yourself. And that means if you think you're going to have an idea and convince other people to invest in your idea, first thing they're going to say, well, is how much did you put in? And if you don't put in very much money, how could you ever confidently sell someone else to put more money in? And so fundamentally, you got to be all in. You know, you've got to, if you do it right, you will feel like it's the hardest thing you've ever done. And if you don't feel that way, then it means either you're not working hard enough or you're not really chasing it hard enough. You know, if you do it right, you absolutely are going to feel like this thing owns me. It consumes me. I eat, I sleep, I drink thinking about my idea. And I know that because I've done this twice over. You know, my firm, my fault. If you make a mistake, fix it. You will make mistakes. If you're not making a mistake, you're not pushing the envelope. Now, don't make stupid mistakes. You know, get a good team. I always say a good financial person to make sure your books are in shape from day one. You know, I've made mistakes where I've really kind of tethered together like a bookkeeper versus an accountant, and I've had to pay the price by fixing things in arrears. And so I didn't do that on pet screening. Pet screening, we said we're going to do it right from the beginning. Get a good lawyer. You know, I think your inner circle needs to be a good legal counsel to make sure your framework is right, from operating agreements to LLCs to corporate structure. Get a good accounting person to make sure your book structure is right. And when you get those two things in place, well, now at least you know you're following the law, and off you go. And I know it's hard for new entrepreneurs to go, I don't have all that money, but investing in those very fundamental building blocks from day one will pay amazing dividends down the road. It's a hell of a lot harder to fix it down the road. So you might as well get it going straight. So those are some of the things I share. And then, you know, we have core values at Pet Screening. One, everyone deserves an opportunity. I do a lot of work with the Down syndrome community. We have a grant for individuals with Down syndrome. In fact, for any of your listeners, if anyone in this country, here in the US, knows someone with Down syndrome, and if that person would like to adopt a dog or a cat out of a shelter or a rescue, Pet Screening will give up to $1,000 to help make that happen. And it's not based on financial need. It's not based on financial need. It's just we want to help someone with Down syndrome improve their quality of life through pet companionship. So we have 7 grants available right now. So that's $7,000 we're willing to give away to anyone with Down syndrome. I don't care where they live. It has to be the U.S. just because we can manage it better that way. But anyway, everyone deserves an opportunity is one of our core values. The other core value is make a mark. If you're going to do something, make a mark. And hopefully it's a positive mark. I mean, it could be a negative mark, but you know, the idea is, you know, when you go in, go all in, and when you leave, how do you want people to talk about you? You know, think about that reputation you leave behind for yourself. So make your mark. And then the third one is laugh more and have fun. We have to, if you're not having fun in what you're doing, then why do it? And here at Pet Screening, we have a lot of fun. That's important to me to sprinkle a little fun into everything we do. And our team will tell you that. I mean, we were one of the best, the Charlotte Business Journal, I think it's called Best Companies to Work For. We were nominated by one of our employees. We have fun here. I mean, that nice. If we're not laughing, then we're doing something wrong.
So what's your next, John? We always ask our guests.
Well, we just launched, I'll share this with you. You know, Pet Screening is growing, and we just launched Amber Alert for Pets. It's a social mission for the company. It's completely free to any pet owner in the U.S. Think Amber Alert for Pets. We call Fido Alert for dogs, Tabby Alert for Tabby Cat, Tabby Alert for cats. Anyone can sign up. We send you a free dog or cat tag. My company pays for it, by the way. It is not free. It's free to you because we're paying for it out of our profits. We do this because 10 million pets a year still do not find their way home. And microchipping is amazing, and every pet should be microchipped. But microchipping alone does not solve the problem, because a lot of people who find dogs, they don't want to put them in their car because they're scared of the dog. So a microchip won't help you if no one's willing to take that dog to a shelter to get it scanned. So we send you a tag that has a QR code that is tied to SMS texting. So when you sign up, you put up to 10 emergency contacts with cell phones. And if your dog or cat ever gets out, whoever finds it scans the QR code, and we instantly text all 10 or however many emergency contacts you have. It can be 8, 6, whatever, but up to 10, we will send all of them an instant text that this person has found your cat or dog. And we launched that about 6 weeks ago. We have over 70,000 people who have signed up in 6 weeks in all 50 states, and we want to get to millions. So what's next for us is to really help move the needle in the lost and pet sector, because there's no company or no product that really is helping solve it uniquely. And we believe Fido Alert and Tabby Alert will do it. And our company is paying for it, and we will continue to pay for it as long as we can afford to pay for it. But we've already ordered 500,000 tags. I have 500,000 dog and cat tags ready to be shipped. And when I say free, Sean and Joni, like, no joke, it's not like it's $5 shipping. It's free. We ship it to you for free. So that's what's next for Pet Screening. And for me is this journey of Amber Alert for Pets through Fido Alert and Tabby Alert. 6 to 8 weeks to get your tag. There's a little supply chain problem out there. So we have to wait on our tag manufacturer, but you will get a tag in the mail. And if you have multiple pets, sign up multiple pets. Like we will send, if you have three dogs, we'll send you three tags. We don't care. We're happy to do it.
Awesome. Well, we just love what you're doing, John. And why don't you tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you?
Yeah, so petscreening.com. If you're a landlord or a property manager, if you're a pet owner or know a pet ower, it's FIDO Alert, F-I-D-O Alert.com or Tabby, like T-A-B-B-Y Alert.com. You can sign up your dog, cat, both. If you have a dog and a cat, you can sign them both up. Completely free service. Again, I say free, but not to create skeptics. It isn't free because my company's paying for it, and we're happy to. And you know, my email you can see on the website. It's John J-O-H-N at petscreening.com. And I want to get just real quick. You know, I mean, you guys are interviewing me, and I just this podcast, it really shows me if you're an owner using your management service, they're very lucky to have you, because I can tell that you're both, you know, thought leaders in our industry. I know because I see you in the industry, and I've been in the industry a long time, and you truly rise to the occasion of what I would characterize as a true professional property manager. And so your owners are lucky to have forward-thinking property managers who realize that there's technology out there that we can use to make our service better. So really props to you and to all your clients that have chosen to use you, and for all the future ones that don't know about you yet.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that. And so, awesome. Well, our listeners are going to be thrilled to listen to this, because I think that, I mean, we're part of a franchise system, and lots of franchises still, you know, don't use the service. So I'm excited for everybody to listen to this. I think they're going to get a lot of value out of this, John. And we truly appreciate you for taking the time to be with us today.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me.
It was awesome. Yeah, you have a great heart, and I could just see it and passion for what you do. So it was an honor. And so thank you very much for being with us today.
You bet. I enjoyed it a lot.
See ya.
Anytime. Thank you, guys.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there. Talking. But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolfsDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.